Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, the balance between justice and security after 9/11. My guest is Karen Greenberg. She has been on the program before. She's the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Her new book, Rogue Justice, The Making of the Security State. Karen, first of all, you know, tell the listeners what you've been working on, basically, since 9/11.
You know, basically, since 9/11, I've been monitoring how our various institutions of justice, whether they're the courtrooms or our legislature or elsewhere, have been dealing with the war on terror, trying to manipulate the laws, trying to do things secretly, and also looking at the things that have taken place above board and in the full light of day.
And I should say that Karen Greenberg is a friend, and her brother and I used to work together. I should get that in here. And I should say that Karen runs a really interesting institute at Fordham, which brings in amazing speakers and has been delving into these issues both there and at her previous university appointment. Rogue Justice, the title kind of says your point of view.
Yes, exactly. It's almost like once you know where you're going when you open this book. You might not know the details, but you get that I really think that justice in all of its forms went awry, went off course after 9/11. And in many ways that we know about piecemeal, whether it's we're talking about targeted killings or we're talking about detention or interrogation or terrorism prosecutions or military commissions, I deal with each one of these issues and try to take a step back and say, look, this is all of a piece. There is a dominant narrative that went on in each of these cases, and that dominant narrative was defer to the executive when it comes to national security. And that over time, what that has done is to weaken any of the protections, many of the protections, that we as a nation should be able to rely on in terms of our courts, our legislature, and even the parts of the executive that should be protecting our liberties and rights.
You know, 15 years almost, you know, just a few months short of 15 years since 9/11, the pendulum, which swung way over to the, you know, let's do anything in the name of security, the laws be damned, has swung back somewhat. Where are we at now?
I think we're in a really precarious position because there is a perception that it has, as you said, swung back somewhat. And it may have, but there's a lot out there that still needs to be addressed. And what we've seen before in attempts to readdress the balance between security and liberty is that a little bit seems to make people very complacent right away. And it's hard. The entrenched forces that want to keep things the way they are now in the post-11 era are not going to back down easily. So, for example, a year ago, the Patriot Act sunsetted, and in particular, those parts of it that had to do with mass bulk warrantless surveillance of individuals, including Americans. That sunsetted after a long trajectory of learning about it, largely through Edward Snowden's revelations, but also through the efforts of a number of lawyers and others inside and outside of government that knew that the program exceeded constitutional protections and principles. But that's not enough. There's still a lot of surveillance that goes on, some of it under certain statutes that were passed during the Bush administration and again in the Obama administration, that need to be better understood. The same thing with Guantanamo. What about Guantanamo? Is it going to persist into the future or is it going to close? What are we going to do with ISIS detainees? We don't have a policy. We need to get ahead of this before it takes off on its own because of some event that we react to as a country. And I could go on, but that just gives you two.
The book details really specific ways the entire kind of legal process, what happened, who did what, you know, the journey through the courts, the journey through the legal system. As you look back over these almost 15 years, what are the worst moments? Is it the John Yoo memos that really start this whole horrible journey that you detail?
Yeah, here are the moments. The moments are the series of documents that John Yoo wrote to authorize a variety of things that were outside of the norm.
Explain who John Yoo is.
John Yoo was a lawyer, a young lawyer in the Department of Justice in an office called the Office of Legal Counsel that was asked by the vice president's office, and a lawyer there, David Addington, was asked to write a series of memos, secret memos, that authorized a number of things, among them torture, also warrantless surveillance, although he slipped that into another memo. And so those memos are pivotal to starting it all out. But really, unless there was a tremendous agreement, at least at the highest levels of power, those programs would not have developed. But perhaps the most, there are a couple of moments that really sort of make you sigh. And one is in 2004, when lawyers inside the government realized that they discovered these policies that were launched by John Yoo memos and by the White House's determination to have these kinds of surveillance and detention and interrogation policies. And they say, Jack Goldsmith, who's now at Harvard, being one of the early ones to do this, they say, no, we can't do this. We're not going to destabilize our entire national security apparatus, but we're going to find a way to rewrite memos and to do these programs in a lawful way. And when they're not lawful, we're going to leave them behind. And Jim Comey, who is now the head of the FBI, carried that message to the White House in a very strong way. And they made some headway. They were able to take certain programs out of the White House, return them to the classified court where they belonged, and then eventually to get some of this codified into law. But that's the good news and the bad news. Some of it getting codified into law is still somewhat further than the kind of protections that we had prior to 9/11. And for the most part, Jack Goldsmith only stays in office for 9 months. For the most part, much of what was discovered and that people reacted to in a kind of lawful way was still left on the drawing board, if not as active policy, including torture, which remains the single most destructive piece of the war on terror to date. It bastardized our criminal prosecutions here in the United States. It's undermined the military commissions, and it's alienated people, enemies and allies around the world. But for me, the most important part of it is really the degree to which it made our courts sort of incapable of standing up to some of the challenges that were faced after 9/11.
Yeah, and there's also no evidence that it worked.
Is there no evidence that it worked, there is evidence that it didn't work. And that's what, you know, Senator Feinstein's 6,000-page report that we still have only seen the executive summary of concluded. So by the way, the Patriot Act surveillance program that was voted down last year by Congress was also shown by a series of internal reports in the government not to have worked.
Tomorrow, we'll continue my conversation with Karen Greenberg about the battle between the need for security and the eternal need for liberty, and her new book, Rogue Justice: The Making of the Security State.